Lisa Brennan Jobs was born in 1978 on an Oregon farm to a mother on welfare and a father who insisted she wasn't his, even as he named a revolutionary computer after her. This contradiction would define her childhood, being simultaneously claimed and denied, wanted and rejected. Her father was Steve Jobs, the visionary who would transform technology and culture, yet he fought a paternity suit claiming sterility days before Apple's IPO made him worth $200 million. DNA tests proved 94.4% certainty. The court ordered support, but you can't legislate love. What unfolds in Small Fry isn't a celebrity tell-all or a bitter settling of scores. It's something far more universal and heartbreaking. A daughter's attempt to understand why brilliance and cruelty can coexist in one person, and how we construct identity when the parent we long for keeps us perpetually at arm's length. This is a story about living between worlds, between poverty and wealth, rejection and belonging, the ordinary and the extraordinary, and discovering that sometimes the most profound inheritance isn't money or fame, but the hard-won ability to tell your own truth. By age 7, Lisa had moved 13 times with her mother, an artist whose life was defined by instability. Money was quick-burning, bright, like kindling. They either had just a little or not enough. When they needed furniture, her mother climbed through a window of Jobs' locked house to retrieve a couch, triggering a silent alarm. This scene captures their existence, always on the periphery of his world, taking scraps while he built empires. Their modest Palo Alto apartment contrasted sharply with the mansion Jobs showed them, a cavernous space with a church organ, elevator, and insect-filled pool. "The house is shit. I'm going to tear it down," he declared. "I bought this place for the trees." Those 200-year-old oaks mattered more than the structure, just as his vision always seemed to matter more than people. After being ousted from Apple, Jobs began visiting monthly, arriving in his black Porsche to take Lisa roller skating. He'd refused to use brakes, instead crashing into poles, a perfect metaphor for his approach to relationships. Lisa assigned mystical qualities to his contradictions, holy genes despite wealth, his lisp, his flat palms. She reconciled these by deciding they made him divine. Rich but wearing tattered clothes, naming a computer after her while barely noticing her existence. Lisa's childhood became an education in anticipation and disappointment. Her mother frequently mentioned Steve bringing a bed, but he failed to show twice. They'd wait expectantly, Lisa in her nice dress, their exciting day deflating when he didn't come. To recover, they'd go roller skating, seeking the buttery smooth pavement that felt like floating. During these moments, her mother would confess, "You're just the daughter I wanted, exactly the one," insisting Jobs loved Lisa but didn't know it yet. This pattern shaped Lisa's understanding of love as something withheld, earned through perfection or patience. Eventually, the bed from Jobs arrived without him, a red metal loft bed with connecting desk and shelf. Her first real bed, her first gift from him, but never his presence. Her mother's depression deepened, and Lisa found herself caught between two women representing opposite futures. There was Debbie, her mother's ex-boyfriend's older sister, who dressed in vibrant colors with clacking Bakelite bracelets, working as an ESL teacher and at Macy's cosmetics counter. Debbie represented everything her mother wasn't: put together, employed, stable. Then there was her mother, sitting in her dim bedroom consulting the I Ching, sobbing, "I lost my 20s," while Lisa enjoyed outings with Debbie. "You have it good," she said. Making Lisa feel their happiness was a limited resource they couldn't share simultaneously. At Hidden Villa Farm, Lisa's mother taught weekend art classes, urging students to capture the spirit of a tree. When Lisa finally stopped seeing the idea of the tree and saw it as shapes of light, she experienced a breakthrough. Yet during critique, her mother praised others while noting Lisa's work was incomplete because she'd finished too quickly. Even in genuine accomplishment, approval remained elusive. This dynamic intensified when her mother prepared for a date with Ron, 7-year-old Lisa made her promise they wouldn't go into her bedroom, but what she really resented was her mother's distraction, half absent with happiness. When Ron arrived, Lisa deliberately showed him personal family photographs from her early childhood to create discomfort. Her mother snatched the album with a furious look. Lisa was learning to weaponize intimacy. During a hike, her mother spotted bright red prickly pear fruit and began climbing the cactus despite Lisa's protests. "I'm glad you're not my mother," she retorted when Lisa urged caution. She persisted, warning, "Red is a dangerous color in nature," as she struggled to remove the fruit. On the drive home, she moaned. Tiny spines had lodged in her throat. This reckless pursuit of something beautiful and dangerous was another inheritance Lisa would navigate. At Nuea, Lisa pursued popularity through appearance, secretly wearing provocative clothing and repurposing a neck cowl as a miniskirt. When Toby, a popular sixth grader, asked to go steady, they French kissed at the stumps. Standing on a stump to reach his height, she experienced her first kiss. Warm, electric, awkward. That summer, Toby called to break up. Lisa apologized, then borrowed her mother's jewelry and silk shirt without permission to call him back, only to realize how foolish she seemed. She journaled about the breakup while posing dramatically in the mirror, where everything looked childish and ill-fitting. At sixth grade's end, Lisa's teacher Joan praised her paragraph about Harriet Tubman, noting its vivid details and emotional depth. Lisa felt an unprecedented rush, her first genuine recognition for academic achievement. Words had flowed effortlessly. She glimpsed a new possibility. She might become smart, and writing could be pleasurable. That transformative summer, Lisa resolved to reinvent herself from middle school. In seventh grade, she threw herself into creating an elaborate geography map, spending 10 hours on ungraded work. Her mother brought a special lamp from her art studio to help. The next day, Lisa's map was the only one displayed facing the class, silent but powerful acknowledgement. Lisa was learning that excellence, not sexuality, might be her path to mattering. After Reed's birth, Jobs asked Lisa to move in with one condition: no contact with her mother for 6 months. Desperate to escape her mother's anger and earn his love, Lisa agreed. Her mother helped her move 4 blocks away, eyes watering. "Don't worry about me. I'm going to be fine." That summer, Lisa volunteered at an assisted living facility while occasionally spotting her mother near Palo Alto, filling her with longing and dread before she'd escape, fearing someone might report their meeting. At Jobs' house, anxiety made her clumsy, breaking glasses at dinner. Jobs offered to change her name to Jobs. She hesitated, suggesting a hyphenated surname. A lawyer arrived. They signed the certificate. During a family photo shoot, Lisa was asked to step out of certain pictures. When the photographer offered solo shots while Jobs and Lorene were absent, she quickly changed into her mother's vintage dress. Jobs emerged and ordered him to stop it right now. Even in his home, she remained provisional, never quite family enough for every frame. During senior year, Lisa secretly applied to Harvard, paying for SAT classes herself and forging Jobs' signature. When she mentioned his Macintosh work in her interview, the interviewer's demeanor shifted noticeably. Her 4:30 a.m. acceptance call prompted, "I got in," signs throughout the hallway. She'd succeeded independently, yet his shadow had still opened doors. That summer, Jobs issued an ultimatum: attend Cirque du Soleil with the family or move out. She chose her mother's dinner. Their neighbor Kevin helped her move that night. Jobs never called back. During sophomore year, he bought her mother a modest house, under $400,000, within a certain radius, without viewing it. When Jobs stopped paying tuition, Kevin and Dorothy funded her final year, an unfathomably big gift from people who owed her nothing. Years later, on Bono's yacht, Jobs finally admitted the Lisa computer was named after her. Small Fry captures every child who's earned love that should have been freely given, who's felt simultaneously special and invisible. Lisa transforms personal pain into universal truth with unflinching honesty and literary grace. The greatest inheritance Jobs left wasn't money or fame. It was the hard-won ability to see clearly, write truthfully, and know her worth was never dependent on his recognition.